I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Yeah, it is. I wanted to start with a little Linda Ronstadt here
love
for the
it.
4 o'clock hour. I love it, too. I heard this one over the weekend, and it made the bumper cut list.
Love it.
It's a short song, too. You know, the art of the short song, really kind of a lost...
art?
Yeah,
yes.
It really is. So a couple things. I teased this before the end of the hour. The Cardinals have made some changes to the coaching staff. Fred, check this out. This is Katie Wu over at The Athletic, who is like one of the more buttoned-up reporters out there on the beat of the Cardinals. John Jay is going to join the staff after 2 years with the Marlins. Willie McGee has chosen to step down, but will remain in the organization as a special advisor. And maybe Willie just wanted to retire. You know, he's been working a lot.
He's allowed to do that.
You know, my favorite... John Jay's story was, I think it was last year, might have been the year before, he was in the station to do an interview about a charity event that he was headlining here. And while he was waiting to go on the air, he came into my studio where I always work and just talked to me for 10 minutes about everything I do.
That's great.
Like he was interviewing
now,
for an internship.
How cute is
and
that?
And he really cared about what I do. And it was really, really
how about old
kind
Fred
of exciting.
Bottenheimer over there, ladies
well,
and gentlemen?
That's really nice, Fred.
Maybe he knew that you were the Hall of Famer, Fred.
Yeah.
You don't know. But
he's
always
he was on the
right.
track.
There was another story that somebody told, maybe it was Dave Klein, where he was on an airplane because, he, you know, he was with the Cubs after he left here. And somebody told me kind of a cool story when he was on an airplane between Chicago and St. Louis as well. But he does have a reputation of being, you know, very
nice.
Gregarious, and he's got some chops when it comes to baseball as well. You know who's really been a big part of the organization, though, this year, and I'm surprised we're not seeing more of him, is Yachty. Remember that thing from the spring?
Oh.
I mean, he was in that dugout so many times, time after time, raising hell, trying to write. What happened with that? Does anyone know?
No.
I mean, I'm asking seriously, Fred. I don't
know.
I no idea. Now, here's somebody told me. A little birdie told me, and I don't really like to spread rumors, but let's spread a rumor because I don't know if there's something to it that maybe he doesn't like Mo, but I don't know.
I thought he was just I always just chalked it up to him being busy and having his own stuff going on in another country.
Yeah, true. However, didn't he get assigned a role with the Cardinals?
Yeah, he was assigned as the special assistant.
Right.
To the president of baseball operations, which is John Mozeliak.
Oh,
did he turn in his timesheets on that?
I can't imagine that he did.
All right, here's another story that's interesting. And, you know, this is sad from one perspective because I really do think that we're losing, you know, well, we've lost, let me just say this, we've lost journalism. Okay, so maybe this isn't the best example, but the reason I want to highlight this is because the numbers that are in the St. Louis Business Journal report about the St. Louis Post-Dispatch are kind of staggering, especially for us who are media people. So what happened today is six people were laid off at the newsroom at the Post. And I don't know who the names were. Hopefully it wasn't Joe Holloman or Derek Gould or someone that we like. But it's been, you know, a rough time in the media industry overall. I'd be lying to tell you that this hasn't affected radio and broadcast. There's so many different places you can put your advertising. None better than live radio.
Duh.
You know, and I say that because, look, I feel like we can do things. Television can bring you those pictures of the devastation, the flood, all of those things. But radio can do it in an immediate fashion.
Yes.
And you can do a podcast, and I know people love their podcasts, but that podcast can be dated maybe about 5 minutes after you put it into the system.
That's right, and we have time for them to actually expound and say, build the whole scene for you.
But at the Post, you know, print journalism has fallen on hard times, and I know a fair amount of people. Now, we're all media people here. We have subscriptions. Sue, do you have a subscription or not?
To what?
To the Post?
Yeah. Well,
okay.
the online.
Digital. Right. But listen to the numbers here. This is Jacob Kim. He is one of the reporters, actually a pretty good reporter at the Business Journal. They've been laying off people on a regular basis just because Lee Enterprises has really, you know, come into tough times. In June 23rd, Lee reported operating revenue fell 8% compared with the previous period. It slashed expenses by 8% as it reported a $3.7 million loss. Then they go into some of the revenue figures, blah, 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 blah. But they have $450 million in debt. Look, our company had a little debt that we had to take care of as well, so I'm not trying to pick on Lee here. But this was really what popped. So as of September of 2023, I don't have the 24 numbers. We can assume they're probably less than this right now. How many people subscribed to the paper, both print and digital. And what would your guess be, Sue?
Where,
from a major daily
that
last year, well, just okay. 2023. So, to a major daily in a city like St. Louis that has, what's our metro area? 2.3 million
probably.
Or something like that?
And the actual paper or online?
Both. Give me numbers for both.
All right. I would say the paper, maybe 50,000.
Okay.
And online, I'll give that more. I'll say 200,000.
You're way off.
Oh, boy.
Way off. Now, listen to this. Print circulation, these numbers are staggering to me. They really are, considering how big of a market we're in. 37,139 for Sunday. Now, that's the printed paper.
Yeah.
37,000. Monday through Saturday, 24,263. Now, that's printed. Okay, so a lot of people have gone away from that. But the digital subscribers had fallen to more than 54,000. Last year, 58,000. So they lost. The latest numbers, I lied a little bit. I don't have numbers up till September of 24, but I do have numbers that go to, you know, the spring. So 54,000, that number's down.
You know,
this comes on the heels. Don't forget what happened last week. They're moving the print operations to Columbia, Missouri.
Right.
And that means if you are one of the few people, handful, I mean, I think we can say at this point, that still gets the paper. And look, I get it. I always liked, and I've finally gotten away from it, but I liked having the newspaper in my hands. I did it for years. Fred, of course, we've been in this business for a long time. But at a certain time, when you see what they're charging you, and when they can't deliver it on time, you think, okay, I'm just going to go digital. But 54,800 in a major daily, you know, you might as well just shut down the printing presses. Don't move them to Columbia, Missouri, because that's not sustainable.
Well, I hate to even say that because I think print is an extremely valuable thing. But as we know,
But how does it make sense, though?
The Post has been so biased. And people are desperate, I think, for neutral, actual reporting, and they're not finding it there.
You know, I wonder how much it's going to hurt as well, since it's starting with the next season for baseball. You won't get that night's results in the morning paper.
Thank you, Fred, for pointing that out, because that is one of the things that will happen. If they have a Monday or Tuesday night game, the next day you're not going to have, you know, on the digital side, you will. But how does it make sense? I'm just saying this from a business perspective. I'm sure they've crunched the numbers. Why wouldn't you say, you know what, we're going to maybe not cut as many reporters and we're just going to go to digital.
Right.
And move forward. Because I think that's where this goes eventually anyway.
Well, probably because they want any income they can get. And if they're getting it from that, let's, you know, keep those people happy.
My one suggestion, we got to get the Sue's News. We're going late here. But, you know, The Athletic is part of the New York Times. And that's like the sports. They don't have a sports page at the New York Times, right? They have The Athletic. And you have to subscribe to that. Honest to God, the Post should do that. You got good people over there like Derek Gould, even the guys I don't like. You know, I don't like Ben Hockman's position on the trans issue, but he's a buttoned-up reporter.
Yeah.
You know, I read his column today about, you know, Wilson Contreras. So I don't know where that's going to take him, but why wouldn't you just spin the sports department out?
Well, see, that would let me out.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I like stories of what happened at that accident.
Thank you.
What was involved.
All right, let's do this here.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No. And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
On this day in history, 145 years ago, in 1879, Thomas Edison turned on the first working light bulb in Menlo Park, New Jersey, and it shined for 40 hours. I don't think I knew the 40 hours
part.
No,
me neither.
Okay, and this has music, because I used to work at Classic 99 overnights on Saturday, and I would actually play this. Okay, let's start the music, and then I'll tell you.
Is it the only one I have?
Yeah, it's the only one you got.
Okay,
that's
here we go.
That's how you know that's the one. That's right, people.
Oh, this is what I was hoping it was going to be.
Yes.
I love this.
I do, too.
But you know what I think I remember it most from?
What?
A bit that was on, like, I got the music.
Was it like Carol Burnett's show?
Yeah, Carol Burnett's show.
Oh,
right.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
It's like Tim Conway doing something really funny.
That's what I flash back to.
Oh, I love it. All right. Well, on this day in history in 1918, Margaret Owen of New York City set a typing speed record. Now, this is on a manual typewriter, Fred. 170 words per minute with no errors.
Wow. Strong
Think
fingers.
About that.
Yeah.
So what was your typing time in high school?
Let me tell you something. I prided myself on being a damn good typer. I took typing class in high school with Chip Carey, by the way. That's one of my memories.
Oh,
and
that's
Sandy
hilarious.
Berenson was in that class, too. Sandy was the daughter of Red Berenson, legendary coach for the Blues. This is what your brain does. It kind of flashes me back to name drop from 1982.
Sure.
However, when I started doing news in the 1980s, and that's when I started at J School, I had to type on a real typewriter, and I did get pretty good at it.
Okay, 170. No, Fred. What
probably
was
not.
No. I could
with
get
no mistakes,
maybe 90 words.
Not you
like
could get to 90.
Yeah, I was pretty good at it.
Dang, I'm impressed by that. Do they teach the kids this, Ethan?
I took computer literacy in sixth grade, but I don't know if that's still a thing or not.
Like, did you learn the keyboard and how to type?
Yep.
I love how they called it computer literacy.
I think Alexa, she's in fourth grade. I don't think she's really learned a lot, but she's done it on her own. She knows how to do it on her own.
Shout out to all the Selectric typewriters out there. Am I right, Fred?
Yeah, you're right.
Okay, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony went down over the weekend. Cher, Ozzy Osbourne, Peter Frampton, Foreigner. Oh, Lou Gramm sounds terrible, Mark. Don't do it
too
to
bad.
Yourself.
Did he really?
Yeah. And they had Kelly Clarkson out to try to help. And
That's too bad. Yeah. I have some Foreigner on the bumper music list today. I did hear that it was a pretty good, because this wasn't the actual ceremony, this is when they played it back, right?
Well, I'm not actually sure, because they would post stuff on Instagram, and I was just listening to the stuff on Instagram.
All right, maybe they did it live. I know that they used to. Maybe they did do it live, because they used to tape it, and then they would replay it. But
correct.
This was on, wasn't it on Disney or something like that?
I don't know. I don't even know that.
My best friend's parents went, and they just posted about it last night.
Okay, well, that means
so
that they
did it, but did they? I don't know if they've aired
I'm not
it
sure.
Yet. All right, cool.
No, they did air it, because I have a friend that... Well, yeah, Becky was at some friends the other night, and they were watching it, so...
All right, well, Kool and the Gang was inducted by Chuck D from Public Enemy, and you got to hear him sing Celebration. It was just all kind of fun.
So this is interesting, because it's different. Maybe we should talk about this on Friday. But what I just referred to, they used to do on Max, used to be HBO. So they would have the ceremony... I always thought it was in the spring, and then they would broadcast it a couple of months or a few weeks. In this particular situation, they streamed it live from the Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse in Cleveland, Ohio, on Disney Plus.
Well,
so it was
go.
Live, and I'm guessing you can still watch it on Disney.
Yeah,
Plus.
I think. Well, that you probably can. Dionne Warwick was there singing "Walk On By." I love it, but that was all last night. And Cher in that outfit. Wow, I don't. Look, how old is Cher now? It's just something.
Here's what I know to be the case. About this goes back 15 years, probably. I saw Cher at Caesars. And what was interesting about that is Cher came on stage, and about 30 seconds later, her face came on stage right after
yeah,
Cher.
Yeah, it's a little of that.
Yes.
I've seen worse, but yes.
By the way, the show was great. She was fantastic.
Okay,
and
good.
She's been here to St. Louis a couple times in the last 10 years, too.
Chocolate prices have more than doubled since the start of the year. Has anybody gone Halloween candy shopping, you know, for the peoples?
Not yet.
You know what? No.
Does Joyce do that for you?
No.
Okay,
my wife,
checking.
Marie, went shopping, and she bought just candy that she would not eat ahead of time.
Yeah, that's how
so
you
our
do
candy
it.
For the kids is stuff that none of us would want.
Correct.
Like what? What would not
dots.
Qualify?
Oh, it was some
dots,
sort of,
yes.
Some sort of chewy gummy bear thing.
Okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, actually, it's cocoa prices that have more than doubled since the start of the year. They've had severe weather and droughts in West Africa, and that's responsible for about 70% of the world's cocoa supply. Candy companies are compensating by shrinking bags and raising prices.
Yes, of course they
are.
Yes.
But there's also talk of them using less chocolate in some products. Like, it says you might find them, quote, swapping out a layer of chocolate for other fillings, like maybe a nice wafer or some nuts. So we'll see how that turns out.
Last week when we were talking about the economy, I think I mentioned this, and I've said it a couple of times. There are things that when I'm going up and down the aisles of the grocery store, and I'm the person that primarily does that, there are things that I've purchased on a regular basis. I'll give you an example. I love my Reese's Dark Thins. The Reese's Dark Thins. I had two after lunch today. That's all I needed. I didn't need like a whole lot of sugar. That gave me the satisfaction I needed. But I've walked down the aisle for those or some M&Ms or something like that. And I've looked at the price, and I've just said no.
Like,
and by the way,
crazy?
And that's at Walmart. Yes,
whoa.
Because you're getting to $7 to $8, and again, it's not as many as you used to get. So you got shrinkflation. This, by the way, is why Donald Trump's going to win in a couple of weeks
because this is
real, and people feel it on a regular basis.
Well, and also in the variety packs, they say you'll just see more stuff like Fred's wife bought and less chocolate. You know what I mean? They'll just try to. And I always get the non-chocolate anyway because who wants to eat it?
I do.
Okay,
I do.
And finally, in Sue's News, we have today's random fact. This was so bizarre. How had I never heard this? NASA used to hold beauty pageants in the 50s and 60s. The title names went from, quote, Miss, M-I-S-S, guided missile, to Queen of Outer Space, to Miss NASA. Did you know this?
No.
She looks out of this world.
Oh, Ethan.
They couldn't use Miss Universe. I guess that was taken.
Well, yeah, exactly. So they had to do their own thing. But yeah, NASA beauty pageants, misguided missile, and the Queen of Outer Space.
Had no idea. That is fascinating. Hey, our friend Brad Young's going to join us for some explainers on the Daniel Penny case in New York and a whole lot more. We got Cusimano at 4:45.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The main threat that he repeated over and over was, I'm going to kill you, I'm prepared to go to jail for life, and I'm willing to die. And I acted in a way that would protect the other passengers, protect myself, and protect Mr. Neely.
Yeah, that's Daniel Penny, who's on trial now, former Marine Corps veteran, well, current veteran, former Marine, facing manslaughter charges for killing this homeless man who was threatening people on the F train in Manhattan. Jordan Neely is the name of, I hesitate to say victim here, but we're going to talk about this with Brad Young, our 97.1 FM Talk legal analyst, partner with Harris, Dahl, Fisher & Young. Brad, how are you this afternoon?
Mark, doing great. I was in Phoenix all last week, so I'm rested and ready to get back to work.
So you did not make it to homecoming over the weekend. That would confirm that, right?
I did not.
And your thoughts on that victory, which was barely a victory?
Well, I think obviously Mizzou went down in the rankings, even though they won. But to some extent, to give them the benefit of the doubt, showing the ability of Cook to leave the game, go to the hospital, come back to the game, and literally win it in the fourth quarter. That was pretty exciting.
No, it's pretty impressive. And Frank Cusimano had Brady on his show last night, and he shared some interesting things in the aftermath of that, even a text from Peyton Manning. So we'll have Frank come up here in the next couple of minutes. Let's talk about Daniel Penny here. What's going on? This has been one of those cases from the very beginning that I think a lot of us have been very confused by, Brad, thinking, how in the world can this guy, knowing what we know about this case, be on trial for anything?
Well, first of all, you have to remember it's in New York, okay? That literally tells you all that you need to know. Secondly, how did the prosecuting attorney's office in New York get an indictment? Well, we've all heard the saying, you can indict a ham sandwich. And that's true here because only the prosecution gets to present evidence to a grand jury, not the defense. So that's how we got here. But basically, here are the facts. You know this. Neely was on the train. I'm sorry. Daniel Penny was on the train. Jordan Neely was threatening passengers. He specifically, and this was evidence at the grand jury, Neely said, quote, someone is going to die today. And that was from a high school student who testified that she started to pray that the doors would open so that her classmates could get away without dying. And Neely threatened he would kill anyone and that he was willing to take a bullet. So at that point, veteran, as you've already pointed out, Penny stepped in, put Neely in a chokehold, and he died. It's all on video, which is actually, I think, to the benefit of Penny. And now he's being charged with manslaughter or second degree murder. If he's convicted on any one of those, he could serve between 4 and 15 years in prison.
The one thing, and I highlighted this earlier, Brad, there's a New York Times account of this, and obviously everybody's following it right now. But one of the things that they pointed to is, you mentioned the video, and there was, they described it as a journalist that was on, you know, the train that filmed this video and also filmed the aftermath. And what they say is that, they were kind of pointing to the aftermath where Mr. Penny apparently did not, you know, reach down to see if Mr. Neely was all right. I mean, do you know anything more about that part of it? Because it seems like that they're going to focus in not only on what happened during the chokehold, but in the immediate aftermath of that as well.
Right. Here's where it becomes confusing, because people are applying a standard used for police officers to Mr. Penny because he was in the Marines. He's a veteran. But those standards are completely different. I mean, he was not in any sort of an official capacity. He was a private citizen. He was defending himself and others. And so the argument goes, and this was what was in the New York Times article today. Well, he should have known when to release the chokehold or check to see if Mr. Jordan Neely was still alive or if he was having problems. None of those standards apply to private citizens. Your only standard is if your life is threatened, you're allowed to use equal and opposite force to protect your own life and the lives of others. Secondly, Marines are never taught. I mean, think about it. Marines are never taught. Make sure he's okay. And if you're in the Marines, your job is to kill the other guy before he kills you. So those standards simply don't apply, number one, to a veteran, and number two, to a private citizen.
Does this end up getting introduced at trial? There is another thing that kind of popped at me here, and I did not know this until I read this part in the New York Times. They say Mr. Neely had been struggling with his mental health for years. He was on, this is quite stunning, he was on a roster informally known as the Top 50, a list of homeless New Yorkers in a city of 8 million. 50 people in 8 million who stand out for the severity of their troubles and their resistance to accepting help. But does that get, you know, so prosecutors say that's the only reason to drag Mr. Neely's medical records in front of the jury is to get them to devalue Mr. Neely's life? I mean,
I don't even think that evidence should be admissible at trial. And let me tell you why. And I know that seems counterintuitive, but I don't even think it's admissible because Mr. Neely's state of mind is not relevant to the conviction or the trial of Mr. Penny. The only relevant state of mind is of Penny as to whether he felt his life was in danger, yes or no. The Mr. Neely's state of mind, whether he was crazy, whether he was homeless, whether he had mental illness, is irrelevant to the question of guilt and innocence.
Interesting.
The only thing relevant is, did Penny fear for his life or fear for the lives of bystanders?
So,
yes or no?
Yeah. Mr. Neely's attorney says this. Jordan had the right to take up his own space. This is the best they got, I guess. He was allowed to be on that train and even to scream. He did not touch anyone. He was not a visitor on that train in New York or in this country. Jordan was allowed to exist, and Penny ceased his existence solely because Penny believed he was more important than Jordan. I mean, that's just utterly ridiculous and makes me want to throw up in my mouth,
absurd.
But that's what they're going to try to do. And the only thing missing from that statement is, oh, yeah, Mr. Penny's a white supremacist as well, because we all know this would not be a case if this was a black dude and a white guy who died or two white dudes. It wouldn't be a case. No one would have ever brought this before a grand jury.
Never. Never. It's truly only being brought because of the white-black dynamic here. But listen, the law, even in New York, is very clear. And a lot of these kinds of cases, like we saw with the Trump criminal case recently, the jury can go one way, the judge can go one way, but dispassionate justices or judges on appeal can look at this without the emotion of the moment and actually make rational decisions. We saw that in the Harvey Weinstein case, where all of these parade of witnesses should not have been allowed to testify. And even the New York Court of Appeals reversed several of the convictions against Harvey Weinstein because they was obviously violates the rules of civil procedure. I see the same thing happening here.
It's going to be interesting. You know, the other thing in the New York Times case, it said that they might have 3 weeks of jury selection. Are you kidding me? That's the best they can do?
Well, you know, we saw that with the Trump case, that there could be weeks and weeks and weeks of jury selection, and it ended up
came together
going
quicker,
in
right.
record time.
Right. So maybe that happened.
And I don't think it's going to take that long here.
Hey, Brad Young is with us, our 97.1 FM Talk legal analyst with Harris, Dahl, Fisher & Young. I don't have a ton of time for this, but I do find this case from Texas because this guy's on death row. What I've said before, Brad, is that, you know, 99.9% of the people that are on death row committed the crime. Now, they try to get him off because of technicalities, and I have said the Constitution is rather important, so I'm not, you know, advocating for doing an end run around the Constitution to put people in prison or death row. But in this case, this Robert Robertson guy who is in prison and on death row for shaken baby syndrome seems very suspect because of the research we now know about shaken baby syndrome.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And your other statement there, Mark, and this is what I want to follow up on. Your other statement about most of these guys are guilty of the crimes they're committed. That's right. And here's the problem that I have with these and other cases that have even occurred right here in St. Louis in the very recent past. And that is this. With this guy with the shaken baby syndrome, mm-hmm. I believe this occurred in 2002. All right.
Yeah.
But all of this action only starts to happen 22 years later when you've got the pressure of a conviction date staring you in the face. When you've got 22 years on death row, that's the time that you work these things out, not the day or the week or the month before the execution.
And it always seems it's the day or the week or the, yeah, exactly. But I'm curious about this one because I have followed that in, and I can't remember exactly, you know, to cite the piece, but I followed a little bit about the research about shaken baby syndrome over the years. I think some of this I looked into when my daughter was born in particular, but a lot of that and the theories that were, you know, I guess determined to be true have not been true. So the medical evidence of what was determined to be so-called shaken baby syndrome is not nearly what they thought it was in 2002. So I think maybe this guy, I don't know, they're asking for a new trial, aren't they?
Exactly. They're asking for a complete new trial on it. I don't think it's going to happen. Of course, we're talking about in Texas. What makes this unique, I know we're short on time, but what makes this unique is that the Texas legislature today started hearing testimony from witnesses, including Dr. Phil and John Grisham, for some reason, about whether the statute should be changed and how it might even apply to this very case.
Interesting.
I've never seen that happen ever. Yeah.
And the other name that I saw connected with this, and I guess he's been with this group for a while, the Innocence Project, is Barry Scheck. He of the O.J. Simpson Dream Team.
Wow. Yes.
Bunch of different names involved. Brad, great to have you on this Monday. We got to share some thoughts on the election before November 5th, and we'll do that. Great to have you on, though.
You got it.
Appreciate
it. My pleasure.
Cusumano is coming up next. We got some Cardinals breaking news today, and we'll talk a little Mizzou and Illinois football coming up. Every Monday and Friday at this very time, we visit with Frank Cusumano from KSTK. This would be no exception. How are you this afternoon, Frank? Good to have you on. As I got to put this little call control thing, I have to lock the phone line. There, I did it. How are you?
Good to be with you, Mark. Everything's going well.
We have some little bit of breaking news from the Cardinals that we noticed with John Jay joining the organization.
Yeah, and I think that's it's a plus because he was a part of a winning organization, and he's a guy that maybe wasn't blessed with great ability, but he lasted a long time because of his work and perseverance, and he's worked with Skip Schumacher. So anytime you can add John Jay to the group, that's a strong thing for the organization.
The other part of that report is that Willie McGee is kind of stepping aside. Is there anything more to that, or is that just Willie saying, okay, I'm going to retire?
You know, Willie's got a lot of daughters and a lot of grandkids in the Bay Area, and I think he's had just about enough of being away from them this long. So that didn't surprise me. We got some inkling of that late in the season. So he's been great for the organization, but there's only so much time you can spend away from grandkids, as you know.
Yes, absolutely. I'm going to see the one in Houston this week. All right, so here we have the two most hated teams probably in all of America going against one another in the World Series, and do we care? I guess we care because, this Ohtani, Aaron Judge story, there are some great storylines with the Dodgers and the Yankees. It's just that we don't want to see them in the World Series. Speaking personally.
Yeah, I was watching MLB Network today. How can it get any better? Well, for a lot of people, it could get a lot better.
Right, exactly. I was rooting for the Guardians. I was hoping for something just a little different.
With that said, though, you do have Judge with 58 home runs on his resume this year. And you have Ohtani with 54 and 59 stolen bases. It's not going to be lacking in star power. And I guess television rating-wise, it's going to do pretty well.
So Fred told me, is this true? It has to be true because the Hall of Famer told me. Was Tommy Edman really the MVP of the championship series?
He was.
Oh, my God. That hurts.
He had 11 RBIs. I mean, 11 RBIs in a league championship series is absolutely insane. It's just like Randy or Rosarena. You know, trade them and they'll become the MVP of the league championship series. We have to be setting some kind of, you know, unofficial baseball record of most trades of guys resulting in the League Championship Series MVP.
Congratulations. All right, so I had a lot of work to do at the house on Saturday. I had the game on at 11 o'clock, the Mizzou game, the homecoming game. It does not start off very well, and then it continues to not go very well. Frank, I'm just going to tell you I'm a terrible fan. I turned the damn game off. I never turned any football back on, and I assumed that Mizzou had lost. I was even getting text messages from folks like our friend Jeff Drew, and I thought, oh, they lost. But they didn't lose, did they?
No, it's I want to go back to one of my favorite songs, which shows some of my age. It's Bonnie Tyler, Holding Out for a Hero, and that's what it was. I mean, we're talking about a guy who was away for almost 2 hours, who was getting an MRI during the game for 35 minutes, and then all of a sudden he runs on the field and he says to Drink, or Drink says to him, do you have any physical limitations? And he said, no. Well, let's go win the dang game. And you know what? Here's an amazing thing. Is on that final drive, that one run where he had to spin around and he went up the left sideline, he was clocked at about 19 miles an hour. That's the fastest he's been clocked all season long. The fourth and five to Luther, the long pass to Theo Weiss. I mean, you talk about an athlete at his best at the most important time. Let me just say this about Brady Cook. If you didn't like him before Saturday, then you respect him. If you liked him before Saturday, you love him. And if you loved him before Saturday, you want your daughter to marry him. I mean, that's a game that will never be forgotten in the history of Missouri, the Brady Cook game from here on out.
And I missed it. I missed it. I never even went back to watch the end of it. Now, he talked to you last night, and he talked about a text message from I wasn't sure if it was Peyton Manning or Painting. Man, you know, that gets confusing.
So Peyton writes what to you, and then you write what to him back.
Yeah, you know, Peyton texted me last night and said, you know, what a gutsy performance. Great job. Keep it rolling. And I said, thanks. I appreciate you. Looking forward to next week. And, you know, just a little text like that definitely means a lot.
All right, so let's talk about next week, because they dropped in the rankings. They deserved, in my opinion, to drop in the rankings, but it really doesn't matter. You win in Tuscaloosa. This whole thing is now once again pointed toward a potential slot in the college football playoff. You don't win on Saturday, you're done.
You're probably right. You know, I wouldn't say completely done. If they were 10-2 at the end of the season, I think you'd still be in the conversation. But you win this thing, and you are just in great shape. And how about this, Mark? If you lose that game Saturday, then it is over. If you lost to Auburn at home, then it would be over. So he kept the season alive. And you know what? For all the criticism he gets, he's lost three games in the last season and a half. Is that good? I think that's pretty good.
It is pretty good. We got to give a little love, and this pains me because, you know, they're not my team, and I don't like their ugly orange colors. But, damn, Illinois is pretty good too, right?
Yeah, who would have ever thought we'd get to a point where Illinois football is better than Michigan football? And that game wasn't even close. I mean, the score was only 21-7, but Illinois just manhandled them. And they've moved up ahead of Mizzou in the rankings. They're having an unbelievable season. Brett Bielema is doing the same thing at Illinois, which he did at Wisconsin, not what he did at Arkansas. He is a great coach. We're really happy for that.
Look, I've seen them three times this year, and they really look like a good team. And, you know, we've seen some stumbles from a lot of really good teams, and that certainly could happen, but they're looking pretty good. All right, Frank, well, listen, have a great week. I will not be here on Friday because I will be in Houston visiting the new grandbaby, and the World Series, I think, starts on Friday, doesn't it, Friday night?
Yes, it does. Friday night, yes, sir.
Friday and Saturday, the first two games. We'll talk, I think, in about 2 weeks because I'm off next Monday, too, so you have a great week.
Bye, buddy. Take care.
All right, take care. I was kind of thinking through that, Sue, because I will not be here on Monday. I decided to take a trip down to Houston. I'm going to leave on Thursday night. I would prefer to take an airplane, but it became a little bit cost prohibitive to do something very quickly. But I'm going to drive down. I've never taken a drive this long down to Texas. I drove back from Dallas a few years ago. I flew to Dallas, and then I drove back here. But 13 hours. So I'm going to go to Little Rock and hang with Bill Clinton and Hillary on Thursday night, probably have a little dinner with them, and then, you know, talk a little bit about politics, hit the road first thing on Friday morning and go to Houston, and then come back on Sunday night, Monday, and be back here on Tuesday. So that's my whirlwind trip.
That's a whirlwind, but it'll be worth it. I mean, that's the first time you'll see him.
That's right. It will be worth it. I can't wait. I thought I was going to take the little 9.5-year-old, but she's got school, and we figured she'd miss a little bit too much school, so she's not going to take the trip with me. We're going to take a break. We're coming back, and we'll visit with Frank Mealy. Montana's an interesting state in the presidential race because of the Senate race, but Frank's great on politics. Steve Malenga will talk about these crime numbers that have all of a sudden been corrected, and we'll do an audio cut of the day. Coming up.
Get more at 971talk.com.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.